Hi and welcome to the Courageous Mama podcast. I'm your host, Madeline Stanimeros. That music you hear in the background is from Jazz Katassi. I asked her to create for us something that was rousing, something that had a call in it. Come, gather. Let's chat about this crazy, wonderful, challenging, rewarding role of parenting. Happy Mother's Day. I've been looking forward to dropping my first podcast, but I couldn't have known it was going to land at such a time as this. The purpose of the podcast is to empower, equip, and encourage parents. And that's going to remain the same, but for now, it will be specifically adapted for this storm that we're all going through together. So the core and goal of this podcast is to have great connection with your children, even on challenging days. Over my years of parenting, I have found that all parents have got one thing in common. They want to have great relationships with their children, both now and in the future. But they're aware that through the difficulties of daily life and some of the differences of opinion that they have with their children, that it's quite hard to hang on to at times. Things can descend into nagging or raised voices, or sometimes the opposite, the huffing and the stropping, the silent stuff. And that's not just the kids. It's going to be a fun place where you get some great tools and insights that will help you to have great connection with your children through the good times and through the not so easy times. And that doesn't mean to say that we're always going to give in to them or give them their own way or agree with them. It's about finding that place of understanding and that place of peace when actually we're not in agreement. That enables us to raise responsible children who make good choices without breaking relationship with them. I guess that's the holy grail of parenting, isn't it? Being able to influence our children and help them to mature and develop at the same time as keeping them safe and ensuring that your family home is a nice place to be. Now that's not just wishful thinking on my part. That's 25 years of tried and tested tools and 14 years of supporting parents. And I never tire of hearing the words, Mads, it works. Because it does. So if you want to eliminate nagging from your life, if you don't want to be that parent that feels they have to raise their voice in order to get heard in their own home, then join me. I know a mum said to me a while back, I feel like my voice is white noise in my home. That's what we're going to eliminate. So I've got a wealth of fun stuff, insights and guests, and I did some great interviews before we all went into lockdown. We're going to look at why kids respond the way they do. We're going to look at personality profiles, some basic neurology, insights into the developing brain made simple, and how to get out of behaviour patterns, not just us, but them too. How to keep our boundaries clear without the arguments, without the raised voices. How to develop responsible kids without curbing their characters. We'll be looking at all of that and digging into the riches that people have found most useful. And all of that is important in any season, but particularly when we're going to be at close quarters with each other. That's when relationship is key. And I believe that by the end of this, our first session together, you'll come out with some fresh hope and a belief that some good will come of all of this for you, your family, and your community. And it's not called the Courageous Mama for no reason. Parenting takes courage. And in this season, I'm going to show you some ways that we can rise and strengthen ourselves and our children. Many of you will remember the floods of 2007, where parts of England and Wales got submerged underwater. We lived in Gloucestershire with 4 small children at that time. We have 5 now. And we, like many other people, have a horror story from that time. But we survived it. And as we look back, our children's memories are not filled with the difficulties of that time. They're actually filled with the memory of what our home felt like in a crisis and what it felt like to be around us in a difficult time. And so it will be with this time. Your children may not remember all the political, social, and economic details of this time, but they will remember what your home felt going through this season. And if they're too young to remember, it will be a part of their makeup. It will be their formative years, and they'll be watching and imbibing how you respond and cope through difficult times. So I want to stand with you in this and encourage you It's a really strange time, and I know that some of you are finding it very difficult. Some of you are completely overwhelmed. Fear is hard work, isn't it? But with or without the current circumstances, our children will have to experience uncertainty in their lives, and even loss. Hopefully, they'll outlive their grandparents. Grief and loss is going to be part of their experiences. We can't protect them from everything. But we can stand with them through everything. We can show them what to do in a crisis and how to survive pain and loss and uncertainty. And I'm not being theoretical here. Our 21-year-old daughter is sick with all of the symptoms and isolating the other side of London. There's a family funeral that we can't attend. And we have elderly relatives who are unwell with the virus. We know of couples who are having to postpone their wedding. I bet you do too. It's real. So let's focus on some things that can help us through the difficulties, some strategies that will help us to live in close quarters with each other. And we're going to end with an interview from a local mum where we talk about some of the very present challenges. But what I'm not looking for is ways to survive. I'm sorry, that's not courageous. I'm looking at ways we can flourish. This is a great opportunity to strengthen our children and show them how to ride a storm. I don't mean that we won't have fear, and of course there'll be moments when we feel unsettled and there'll be hardships that we face. But courage is not the absence of fear. It's feeling the fear and pressing on anyway. And one of the best ways to combat fear is to look at what choices we have in any given scenario. It's the antidote to feeling powerless. And we all have choices in this current reality. Our three main choices are these: how we manage ourselves, how we support and strengthen our families, and how we reach out to others. So let's start with managing ourselves. Well, what prevents us from managing ourselves? It's that fear, isn't it, that steals our peace. It has its roots in uncertainty. The hardest part of life can often be the not knowing. And I know from being connected to many of you that it's the not knowing in this season that's really, really difficult. Not knowing how long it's going to go on for, not knowing what the outcomes are going to be, not knowing the hardships in the process. And I understand that. We have 5 children, but I've had 13 pregnancies. And that time between suspecting a loss and knowing for sure whether you've lost your baby or you've got a fighting chance at a viable pregnancy was awful. I found it harder than the actual loss when it came. At that point, I moved on to grief, but it was never as hard as the not knowing. At least I knew where I stood. And of course, I'm not hoping for bad outcomes for us, but I am acknowledging that not knowing is huge. But as the losses went on, I got better at it. I don't mean I cared less, and I don't mean that I engaged any less with each pregnancy. In fact, quite the opposite. But I developed strategies and got better at living with not knowing the outcome. I developed peace in my storm and patience in adversity. It doesn't mean I'm the most patient person you ever met, but I'm a lot more patient than I was. Managing yourself comes down to 3 things: managing your input, managing your output, and managing what you put in the middle. So let's start with input. There's so much information out there, isn't there? I know that one mum said to me, "I'm obsessed with it. I can't keep off my screen." So my key question to you is, are you managing your media, or is your media managing you? Of the 15 million pieces of information out there in a day, probably 2 are useful. If the information is really key, it finds us. So work out what's helping you and what's distressing you. What media input is helping you and what's throwing you? Which friends are helping you and which are distressing you? I'm not saying ditch your friends. I'm just saying manage your exposure, connect with the right voices. I speak to so many parents about their children's media habits, and this is a fabulous opportunity to share that we're so tempted. It's hard, but we're resisting. We're making choices about our exposure and sticking to them. Self-control isn't avoiding things that are easy. It's when something's really tempting, but you choose to avoid it. We also have choices about the balance of input. There are panic stories and rumours and criticisms out there. But there are great stories out there too, and not to mention some fabulous comedy relief. So getting that balance by what you see that informs you and what you see that lifts your spirits is really important at this time, not just for you, but for the people around you. So that's input. What about output? How do we make good choices about the things that we say and the things that we write digitally? Well, the first thing that I want to say is that if you are feeling stressed about the behaviour of other people, I want to validate that. It's really hard. If they're making choices that grate on you or unnerve you, that's a valid concern and it's tempting to share that online. But here's the problem. It's a shaming tactic, even if it's intended to be informative or cautionary. Statistics show that people do not improve their behaviour from what they see online. Shame doesn't build character. Shame doesn't influence people. Sociologists have found that people are far more influenced by positive behaviour and good role modelling. So if we do need to vocalise ourselves on the internet, we'll get far more return on our efforts by talking about the great stuff that's going on out there. There are communities that are coming together. Elderly neighbours who are being cared for and getting food packages and flowers on their doorsteps. I know of someone who said, "Our road has got to know each other. We didn't even know who our neighbours were." And here's one that I love. We care for one of our elderly neighbours and he's now in a care home. And the local primary school is linking its kids to an elderly person, like a buddy, and they're going to be pen pals together. That could be one of the many enduring ideas that comes out of this time. And I know that the staff at the care home are so uplifted by that gesture. So if fingers are itching to post, post something positive, and you'll be far more likely to get a positive outcome. And that output extends to leadership, doesn't it? I want to affirm you again and say that your opinions are valid. But have you heard the expression, if a child grows with criticism, they learn to condemn? I could do a whole podcast on this, but the upshot is a culture of condemnation, even if it is just aimed at politics, still forms the culture in our homes. And the people our children turn their condemnation on is themselves. Counsellors say that children who are self-condemnatory have often grown up around people who are liberal with criticisms, even if it is just aimed at the TV. With the best will in the world, leadership will make some mistakes. We're leading our families, and we'll make some mistakes too. We don't do ourselves any favours when we tear down authority. We simply undermine our own selves. There isn't a leadership in history that has led through a worldwide pandemic before. And of course it's healthy to have an opinion, and it's healthy to encourage your children to have an opinion. But there are consequences to how we express it and in front of whom. Let's be an inspiration to each other and celebrate that we've got a common goal. And what about what we put in the middle? That is to say, how we manage our minds. That's another area that we do have choices about. I don't know about you, but I find I'm far less patient with my children when my mind is festering on a worry or a wound. If our brains have landed on the same concern five times, it's a loop. You're stuck in a loop. Now, it may be a valid concern, but all it's doing is releasing cortisol through your veins and interrupting your physical as well as mental health and even affecting your immune system. I love the work of Dr. Caroline Leaf. She shows you literally what happens to us through brain imaging when we worry. Our magnified brains look like healthy trees or wilting trees. So what choices do we have when those concerns feel so real? Well, we have a choice as to how much brain real estate we allow them. There's some great stuff out there on how to help ourselves when we go off down bunny trails. But if I was to choose one tip that I find helpful for this section, it would be this. Take the thought captive. Empathise with it, just like you would with a friend. It's a real concern and it needs to be validated. And then park it and fill that space with something else. Science has proven that when the mind moves to gratitude or thankfulness, a physiological change takes place in us. So maybe write down or mentally log the things that you feel grateful for so that you can come to them when you're looping. You can speak them out, you can read them out. We're keeping a running list on our fridge, and children will learn from our response and behaviours in a time of stress. I'm not oversimplifying it, I know it isn't easy, but we do know that what we practice at, we get better at, and it gets easier over time. So what a great time to practice a new strategy. Managing ourselves is kind to our kids. When we're on an aeroplane, there's a good reason why they tell us to put the oxygen mask on ourselves first, in the case of emergency. It's because then you're far better placed to help others. So in summary, we have choices. We can choose which voices to let in and which voices to keep at bay. We can choose healthy output, and we can choose to practice what we let our minds settle on. And that will leave us in the best place to make good choices for ourselves, our children, and our families. So let's move to children. In the absence of truth, our children will come up with theories, and sometimes we don't know what's going on in their minds. So the best thing to do is to sit down with them, pay attention, and ask them what they think of what's going on. I was chatting with a mum this week, and she asked her children what they'd picked up from school. And one of her children said, if we sit too close to each other and we cough, we'll probably die. Well, I'm quite sure that's not what the school said, but we do know that stories get muddled as they pass around. So listening to our children before we speak means that we can speak into their key areas. We can invite them to ask questions. Kids often know how much they want to know, and if they're given an opportunity, their questions can be quite direct. And if we stick to just answering the question as it comes, then we won't be overfilling their minds with the parts they're not ready for. And truth is important too. It's dangerous to make promises that we can't keep. I know it's tempting. I know we want their ears to hear consoling things, and truth can be the harder option. Courage is never the easy option. But it's in the challenging seasons that our children will learn whether they feel they can trust us. Not having the right and reassuring answers doesn't make us weak, it makes us trustworthy. And truth begets trust. And trust is at the basis of all healthy, connected relationships. Teaching them how to live in an uncertain world has far more value than telling them that the world is certain. That doesn't mean that we're catastrophizing or overloading them with unnecessary fears, but it does give us a chance to empathize with their concerns. So often as parents, we want to wash their concerns away, but it's far more courageous to let them talk about them and affirm that those concerns are difficult for them. When we wash them away or say, it's fine, it's going to be all right, they're not going away. Our kids are just squashing those emotions down. So listening to them and affirming them makes you a safe place to come, not just now, but as they get older and as the stakes are high. If they know that you're somebody who can be relied on not to push their stuff away, it's you that they'll come to. As adults, we don't go to people who dismiss our concerns, do we? We go to people who get us. I'm going to do a whole podcast on empathy because it's a brilliant topic and an absolute life changer in families. I know that from the feedback that I get. But suffice it to say, if you meet your child in their concerns and empathise with them, they're far more likely to express what will actually help them in that scene than they are to spiral into despair, which I think is what we think we're rescuing them from when we say, it's fine, it'll all be okay. But we're not, we're shutting them down. Let's open them up. It's not helpful for them if we push it all off the table. Quite the opposite. Put it all on the table and have a good look at it together. And what if they ask about something that you don't feel they're ready to hear? Well, that's a great question for other scenarios too, such as the facts of life. I love the story by Corrie ten Boom when she was coming back on a train with her dad and she asked her dad a question that he thought she wasn't quite ready for the answer to. He was a watchmaker by trade, so when they pulled into the station, he asked his daughter to pick up the bags, which were heavy and full of metal watch parts. She tried and she couldn't lift them. So he gently said to her that there are some things that are too heavy for her to carry just now. And in time, he would let her. But for now, he would carry them for her. And so he picked up the bags and he carried them. I can't think particularly of what your children may ask that they're not ready to hear, but at least if you're armed with that, you know that you've got a ready answer for them if that scenario comes about. And another thing that we know about children is that in times of difficulty, they puddle jump. That is to say, they can jump in and out of difficulty with alarming ease. As adults, we tend to wade down the river a bit more. Issues are more present for us, even if we're not dwelling on them. Kids can go really deep, and then they can ask you to pass the ketchup. It's tempting to return them to the issue and finish up, but easier for them if you just let them come back to it when they feel ready. And so to managing our family. Well, we might not know much for sure, but we do know that we're going to be spending more time with each other over the coming weeks. And the response to that is varied. Some have made agendas, worked out a plan, and are even choosing to look forward to this time together. Others are nervous. It doesn't make us a good or bad parent either way, we're just different. All of our children have attended school, but they've also all had some years at home being home educated. So I will podcast in future episodes some great tips and tools from me and from other home educators that I admire, as well as some free resources. And if you're concerned about teaching at home after the Easter holidays, I hear you. That could feel really overwhelming. One friend said to me last week, I'm 3 hours into homeschooling, and one is suspended from skipping classes and the other is expelled. So lots of great tips to come, but more crucially, how do we huckle down together peaceably? I know that the extroverts out there are wondering how on earth they're going to manage without their community and without all the things that normally fill their days. And the introverts are at B&Q, celebrating the world on pause and planning the DIY jobs. And the question I keep hearing is, how am I going to survive? Well, remember, the benchmark is higher than that. How are we going to flourish is the question. Well, firstly, let the kids be part of the plan. They're endlessly creative, and if you let them help to plan, you'll get far more buy-in from them than you will by just putting up a timetable. Get the paper out, get the colours out, get the ideas out, and let them lead, even if they're really small. You can have the final say, but it'll go down much better with them if they know that they've informed the process. And then even let them know you'll get together in a few days or a week or so and talk about how you all feel it's going, so that you can make improvements. They will feel empowered. And another thing that will help them to feel empowered is if they feel they can make a difference. It's in the heart of human nature to want to make a difference. Perhaps it'll be that they add something to your grocery list for an elderly neighbour. The neighbour will benefit, but the message your kids will receive is powerful. They'll glean that they can make a choice that started in their mind and made a difference to someone else's day. That's empowerment. So let's drill down now on one character profile that could be really useful to you in this season where you're going to be spending more time at close quarters. I've got some podcasts coming up on personality types, but the one I'm going to look at today is introverts versus extroverts. I touched on it very briefly earlier. It's a misunderstood area, but it was a life changer for one of our children. We often think of extroverts as loud and gregarious characters, and introverts as the slightly quieter characters, perhaps those that keep themselves to themselves. But what I'm talking about here is the Myers-Briggs definition, because it's what will give us a deeper understanding. Think of an extrovert as somebody who refreshes themselves in company. Now, they could be a noisier character, but equally, that could be a quiet person. The key is that they're energized and restored by being in the company of others. By the same token, an introvert isn't necessarily that quiet person, it's just someone who's refreshed in their own company. Knowing that matters more now than ever. For us, it was revelatory. One of our children would have a meltdown most Sunday afternoons. After he'd had a morning at church and all the social activity that comes after church, we'd often have people around for lunch. And without that space to refresh himself, because he was an introvert, he was gasping for air and melting down. But he couldn't necessarily articulate what was wrong. So releasing him from the obligation to join us for lunch on the occasions we had friends home meant that he could cope. It literally made a world of difference to his day and the coming week, and actually him learning how to manage himself. So it's helpful to look around your children and ask yourself, by that definition, who are introvert and who are extrovert? And when you're looking at the weeks ahead, making sure that the extroverts get enough kind of together time with however many of you there are, but the introverts actually get permission to take themselves off and have some quiet time. That will make a world of difference to their experience of the day. That way, you'll get the best version of your children, and they'll be easier to be with, and so will you. And by the same token, some of you are going to be gasping for company. So for those extroverts out there, you could think about downloading an app that allows you to interface with lots of different people at once. We use Zoom. It's a great tool. It basically means that you can be chatting and interfacing with lots and lots of different people at one time. So we did our Macbeth rehearsal in the kitchen the other day on Zoom. Everyone was fully dressed and reading out their lines together, but not together. And we're planning a massive Zoom cyber meetup for our huge family for my uncle's 80th. We know this time will not pass without event, but we do have control over some parts of it. Being courageous isn't easy, but it's fruitful. So my questions are these. What do we want to look back on in 2020? How did we strengthen ourselves and our children through that time? And what did it feel like for our children to be in our company and our home through a difficult time? We've looked at lots of different things there. And now I want to introduce you to a lovely mum, Rose, who's been on one of my courses. And I started by asking her, what do you think parents are afraid of in this season?
I think it's the unknown of how long things are going to be. I think if someone said to you, okay, 12 weeks, you've got to spend 12 weeks at home with your children, the schools are going to be closed, and this is how it's going to be, you could sort of rationalise 12 weeks in your head. You could come up with a sort of timetable of events. But because there's this unknown of, well, how long is it going to be? Mm-hmm. Is there going to be school again after 8 weeks? Is there going to be any of this? Yeah. I think the unknown. And I think...
when's it going to get personal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's the hard one. Because it's everyone's worrying. But, you know, you're worrying because it is so unknown. And then when's it going to be that one of my friends is going to be affected by it, by a member of their family? Or is it going to affect any of mine? And it's worrying about, you know, that you are making the choices that are right. But it's worrying that what if there are people out there being, you know, risking it.
Being heavily.
Exactly. Mm. Well, I've only got a cough. I only feel this way. I'll probably be fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't have control. Over everyone else's choices.
I know, it's really hard, isn't
really
it?
Really hard. Hard. And also the unknown of, you know, is it going to spread to the area that I'm in? Is it going to affect us at all? And also childcare people. I mean, we're in a very lucky position. My husband works from home. I'm a stay-at-home mum. So for us, childcare isn't an issue. But if you're taking out nurseries and schools and if you're taking out grandparents for childcare, that's going to be a huge stress financially on people. So it's a really scary time.
Worrying,
really scary. I think the unknown is they keep saying, well, it only has mild effect on the younger generation. But how mild are said mild effects, or what if it wasn't? It's constantly that what if, I think, you know, what if my child reacts badly to it, or it's not knowing. I think also because we're not doing the testing, it's that constant worry. Well, they're coughing. Have they got a slight temperature? And then you're thinking, well, is it, isn't it? And I think it's that. I feel like that's, that is stressful.
Not knowing is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Because we're so used to knowing.
Yeah.
And I think it's also how much children are picking up on. So if you've got the news on in the house and you've got things like that, it's how quickly they are to pick up on things. We haven't had the news on in front of the children, but I mean, we've had open conversations in a way that they understand about it. So I kind of put it off for as long as possible because it hadn't affected us. So, you know, you kind of think, oh, I don't need to tell them about it yet. And then last week when we saw that schools were being closed in other countries, I said to him, oh, I think you might go on holidays earlier at nursery. There might be earlier holidays. And then I thought, oh, I'm kind of lying to him and I'm not really good with the fact of that. I don't want to tell him it's, you know, holidays, and it's just in case they're saying, you know, you don't know what someone else is going to say and all this.
So you want to be honest.
And they'd had a nurse in, they talked about germs, they talked about washing their hands, and he washes his hands really well now, and we've been bringing in any time we leave the house and come back in, we're washing our hands and all of those things. He's got quite used to that. So I kind of just went into the conversation with that. So, oh, you know how they talked about germs at nursery? So I said, I don't know if you've heard about the word, you know, coronavirus. And he's like, I heard coronavirus. Mm. Okay. And I said, all it is, really, is a really nasty lot of germs that are making people poorly. And I said, if you or me got it, we'd be fine. We'd stay at home how we normally are when we're poorly. We'd take some Calpol, we'd watch a film, and we'd feel better in a few days. It's a bit, if some older people got it, like grandma and grandpa or grandma and grandpa, it would make them poorly enough that they'd have to go to hospital and they really wouldn't feel very good. So what we don't want to do is let those people get it. So then we had to have a conversation about, so we're not going to go around and see grandma and grandpa anymore. To which he was like, okay, but I can go and see grandma and grandpa after rugby on a Sunday. And I was like, no, we can't see them either. And then his, you know, his face dropped and I said, you know, are you okay? And are you feeling sad? And he said, I am feeling really sad about it. And I said, oh, you know, if you need to cry about it, that's fine. He said, no, I don't think I need to cry about it, but I am, I'm really sad. And then when we got home later on, he did have a little cry and we had a cuddle, and I said, and he said, his first question was, is it only just for a little bit? And I thought, well, in my head, it is only a little bit, because if it's a few months, that's nothing. But for him, that's a really long time. So I said to him, no, it's not just for a little bit. It's going to feel like a really long time. And I said to him, you know, we can FaceTime them, which is amazing, being able to do that.
Yes.
And I said, and in a couple of weeks' time, we'll be able to go on walks with them, but we won't be able to, you know, touch them. I said, we could take a picnic and we could sit next to each other and we can talk to each other. I said, but we won't be able to touch them and they won't be able to come to our house and we won't be able to go to their house.
Yeah.
And I can see him processing it. And then when I picked him up from nursery today, my parents live really close to there. His automatic was, can I go and see grandma? Oh, I can't, can I? And I said, no, we can't. Then we got home, he said, I'm really still sad about not being able to see them. So we did, we FaceTimed them, and I could, you know, he felt better after that. But it's going to be a really difficult, really difficult time, because he is used to seeing a lot of his grandparents. So that is
But great that you took the honest route.
Yes. I felt that it was important.
And it sounds like you haven't given him more information than he can handle.
No.
And how do you manage your own stress about it?
I said to my husband, I feel fine in the mornings about it. I wake up and I think, oh, it's fine. You know what I mean? You get through the day. And then by the evenings, by the time I've watched some news or I've scrolled through social media, I suddenly get to that panicked point. I mean, I did have a cry about it the other night when they said about the over 70s having to stay in. I thought, oh, that's it. I'm not going to see my parents. And that's, I find, you know, really difficult. And then you start to worry about, you know, other family members. So like Ian's grandma is alive, but she's in a nursing home, so now there's no visiting them. And so you think, what if that's worst case scenario with that? So it does get on top of me. But I've just been trying to stay off social media. So don't clicking on articles. Actually, no. And then also searching for like good news with it. So last night there was a fact I read about the fact that there's 80,000 people that have already been cured from it and are fine, and then watching videos now of Shanghai where there's cars on the road again, there's kids in the park again, and they're all right. And I thought, actually, that's what I need to do. You need to look at the good news through it. You need to know the facts. I want to be armed with the facts so that I know that I'm doing the right things, but I don't then need to delve deeper into reading about it.
That's true, isn't it? Because some people are saying, yes, but there's another wave of it in China. So I think, yes, but today, there is some good news.
Yes.
And yes, they may end up being not so great news tomorrow,
but right
today
now,
we've got something to celebrate.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. Tell me, when you were scrolling madly through all of the news, were you really learning more?
No.
No.
I wasn't learning any. There wasn't, you know, it wasn't arming me with something that I could do anything about. It was just heightening stress levels, anxiety, just thinking, oh my goodness, this is horrendous. This is awful. Look how many people it's affecting. How are we going to get through this? And it didn't, it didn't give me any knowledge about anything.
And is it easier to keep your stress levels down now that you're looking a bit less on social media?
Definitely. And now that I know, it was the uncertainty of whether they were going to close schools or nurseries, and there's still this uncertainty about whether we are going to be on lockdown, how quickly are we going to be on a lockdown. And so it's kind of, you know, my fridge is full, my freezer's full at the moment. I haven't panicked for anything, but I've got enough food to get me through the next 10 days that having to go to the shop.
Right.
And it's that change of mindset. Okay, we're not going to be able to go out and go to, you know, like our local farm park to visit. We're not going to be able to go to friends' houses, but we are going to be able to go on walks, and we are going to still be able to do that. So it's kind of, instead of thinking of all the things you can't do, it's coming up with all the positive things that we are going to do in this next time. And I've said for a while that I've been craving like quality time with Arthur before he starts school in September. So I'm kind of trying to take it as a positive. Well, okay, this is the quality time then. This is the time I get with him before then. So it's, but it is, it's difficult.
And I know some parents are quite thrown by the notion of being with their children all day without the normal sort of activities and things to go to. Is that something that overwhelms you at all?
I mean, we do go to a lot of children's groups. Our local church is really good for groups that they have on. We go to groups Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. So for us, that is, you know, that's a big change. And that's also, for me, my social place of seeing my friends and having sort of my sanity and having conversations, do things. So the change with that is definitely going to sort of hit us and is going to feel different. And it's going to be coming up with enough activities that last a long enough time in the house and things. There's definitely going to be a shift.
And have you come up with some ideas yet?
Yes, so I've got lists of things on Pinterest. My board's full. I've got, you know, we're going to do homemade Play-Doh. We're going to do some, I'm going to find some good YouTube videos of yoga and dance and things to do with them. I've got different lists of walks that we want to go on and different bike rides that we can do and things like that. And it's just, I don't want to set too strict a routine for myself, but it's kind of that we're still going to get up, we're going to get dressed every day, and then we're ready. We're ready to either go out, we're ready to do this. And I think, again, it's where choices are actually really going to come in to help with Arthur, because there's going to be more choice. We haven't actually got to be anywhere.
Yes.
So actually, here's, you know, three activities.
Yep.
Which one do you want to do? Or do you want to go out? Or do you want to do this? It's actually, it should be quite a nice time with that. Is what I'm, you know, I'm selling myself on.
And do you have some natural anchors in the day? Because you've got a baby that...
Yeah, she naps in the middle of the day, every day, which is nice. So that will also give me an Arthur time to get things like Lego out and paint out that aren't as easy to do with her around. So that'll give us that time to have like our creative time together, which should be
It's time to get the glitter out.
It is time to get the glitter out and time to Hoover four times a day.
But loads of time to Hoover.
Exactly. The house will be spotless.
It will. Yeah. Brilliant.
And I mean, my mum's parents have self-isolated for 2 weeks already now, and they're going to continue to self-isolate, so I know they're fine.
They started early.
My Bompy, as we call him, had a heart attack a couple of years ago.
Right.
And so he's got a weak heart. Okay. And my grandma's got a slightly weakened immune system. So they were like, actually, we're just going to be sensible beforehand. We're going to lock down now. And my aunt lives near them, so she's done their food shopping for them. So they've been able to. Okay. They've been lucky enough to be able to do it. So she's dropped things off on the doorstep that they need. And it's self-isolated. So that's taking the worry off us. We know they're fine. Yeah. My parents are going to start self-isolating as of now. So we can do their food shopping for them again because they live in the local area, and my husband's parents are doing it. That's kind of taken a few worries off the table for us. It's also, you know, you want to be relaxed. I don't want to be running around with a thermometer three times a day, beeping in everyone's ears. But at the same time, you don't want to go out if you have got, you don't want to be the one that goes out and risks it without knowing that you're risking it.
So, and then there is a part of you thinking, shall I just get it? Get it over with.
Yeah.
But then what if it wasn't it?
Yeah, or shall I just completely self-isolate so I don't get it? Yeah. Am I ready to shut myself in and just be done with the outside world? So it does, it becomes, it is scary. It's definitely a scary time.
It's a hard time, isn't it? My daughter's at uni. She's just outside London. Yours. Well, yeah, her two flatmates got it. And she was like, oh, it's coming my way, I know it. And now she has got it. Now, we don't know if it is it, but it seems to present with all of the symptoms that would suggest that it is, one way or another, she has to isolate. But actually, she's more at peace.
Because she's...
She's got it.
Yeah.
She's halfway through it. It's nearly over. Because she's watched them go through it.
So she's seen,
And I think it was almost worse thinking it's coming my way.
And has she had... Has it been really bad with her?
Not desperately bad. I mean, she's been... Yeah, she has been quite unwell, but she's fine. She's always joyful. She's a peaceful little thing. But yes, I think once you've got it, it's like, okay. It's like,
okay, yeah.
I've been caught, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I know what I'm in for.
Yeah.
Roughly. So I'm going to ask you now about introvert, extrovert. So you've got some information on that. What have you worked out that you are?
Extrovert.
And were you surprised by the parameters of extrovert?
Yeah. Because I wouldn't say I'm loud and proud and walk into a room, which is what I'd kind of thought of extroverts as that. I'm here, I've arrived person.
Yeah.
However, I've now learned that it's where you get your energy from.
Yes.
So I get my energy from people. I get my energy from being around people and talking to people and socialising.
That's how you refresh.
That's how I refresh. Mm. That's how I do that. And Ian, my husband, definitely introvert.
Mm.
So for him, if I was to offer a night in comparison to a night out, he would pick night in 100% of every single time.
Right.
So getting him to go out the situation has to be really worth it to go there.
All the planets have to line up.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So it has to really be worth his time to go for that.
Yeah.
But he says I have brought him out of his shell more with that, and he does actually, you know, like family functions he finds easier now, and he finds it, you know, easier to go with someone who is an extrovert because I'm happy to go and talk to people and do those things. And it's work. But knowing that took a while in terms of, well, why doesn't he want to go out and why doesn't he want to do the things like that, and realizing that,
knowledge is key, isn't it? It's power. And do you find it helpful, you know, knowing he's an introvert, that, okay, we've got to go out, we've got to have a family function, but how about when we get home, you just have a bit of cave time and I'll take the kids for a bit and regroup. Have you worked out what Arthur is yet?
No. Mm. He's a funny one to watch. We've been trying to figure it out because he does really, really appreciate his time by himself.
Mm.
And he does like his time at home. But he does ask to go to people's houses and he just ask to see his friends.
Mm.
So I still can't quite pinpoint where he's most comfortable and where he's most...
It'll evolve,
So I think,
it could just be that he's getting a good balance.
Yeah.
So you're not seeing...
Yeah.
The sort of upside down version of him. I mean, you might if he gets too much of a good thing.
Yes. Yeah.
He just gets weary. Yeah. And so Ian is probably not as depressed at the prospect of holing up for a month
or
longer.
Absolutely not. He is up for that. He is ready to hit pause on work and just sit and be at home and no one knock on the door.
Yes.
No one be anywhere.
And
so
have
he's,
his family all to himself.
He's more than prepared for a few months worth of.
And how are you feeling about isolation?
I'm feeling like my data bill is going to go through the roof on FaceTime and everything else. But I've done simple things like me and my mum were saying that in the evenings, once we put the kids to bed, once it gets a bit lighter, we can go for a walk.
Yes.
We can stay 2 meters apart on the pavement, we can go for a walk and we can talk. Whereas my dad is like Ian again and is more than happy to stay at home that entire evening.
Call me in November.
Exactly. And not worry about it. Because he knows that mum will come home and tell him everything that's happened anyway. So he doesn't feel the same need. So.
And what did Ian make of the definition of introvert and extrovert?
Again, he thought the same thing because he's not shy.
No, so he said, he's friendly and warm.
Yeah, he is. So he said, I'm surprised because I wouldn't have said I was an extrovert because I wouldn't be loud, but I wouldn't want to label myself an introvert because I feel like that's that, you know, that you visualise the person sat in the corner.
Yes.
Not wanting to do anything at all. So I think once you actually read that it is, again, that it's that energy thing and it's where you thrive.
Yes.
He was like, and it's also that crossover that you can be both.
Yes.
You can make yourself an extrovert in a situation. It's not where you're comfortable and it's not where you choose to be, but if you need to switch it on for a little bit, you can, but it definitely exhausts you to switch yourself into that. You need to be able to have the time to retreat back into where you actually...
Yes, go and plan your cave time.
Yeah,
definitely. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, that was insightful stuff from Rose. I hope you enjoyed meeting her. I thoroughly enjoyed the time I spent with her. It's been such a privilege sharing some parenting things through a difficult time. And if you want to find me, I'm very easy to find on Instagram under The Courageous Mama. See you there.